Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The clock dictates so much of what we do and when we do it. Today, most of the country has already shifted their clocks 1 hour ahead for daylight savings time. We're taking the opportunity to acknowledge traditional Native concepts of time during the day and throughout the year. Although we mostly adhere to the same clock and calendar, there are subtle ways in how we perceive and keep time. That conversation starts after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nationwide, nearly 17,000 homes on tribal lands did not have electricity in 2022, according to federal data. The Biden administration is making new investments to change that. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
The federal government is spending $72 million to bring electricity to these homes, with the goal of using clean energy sources. The Navajo Nation in New Mexico, Utah, and Arizona is receiving $10 million. Denise Bicenti is with the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority. She says the funding will aid hundreds of families.
It helps reduce the anxiety of not having refrigeration or electricity for heating, for cooling. It just kind of reduces the stress levels of families who have to live without electricity.
She says there are currently 13,000 of those families across Navajo Nation. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Get Out the Native Vote has worked hard to get more Native people to the polls in both local and national elections. Recently, the nonprofit in Alaska has branched out to 45 schools. As KMBA's Hannah Bissett reports, the hope is to create more youth advocates.
As director of the Get Out the Native Vote movement in Alaska, Michelle Spark has her work cut out for her. She's currently traveling to schools to get to the root of the problem.
The only real problem and barrier to voting is Alaska's idiosyncrasies and a low recruitment and retention record.
Right now, there aren't many incentives for election volunteers. In some communities, compensation is as low as $100 for 2 weeks of service. Not enough to make up-and-coming elections a priority. On top of that, the ability to vote early is somewhat inaccessible to individuals who live in rural areas, requiring travel to urban hubs like Anchorage.
So what we're trying to do is just make the communities more aware of different ways you can contribute to the election process.
And that starts with getting students interested in voting rights and advocacy, and pay as they train and work for the group. Spark hopes that this program gets children excited to vote and educates them on the power that they have with their votes.
These kids know the value of their vote before they're even 18, and hopefully we've planted the seeds for new generations of super voters.
A super voter would be someone who votes in most, if not all, elections in their communities locally and nationally. Spark notes that this program also helps guide future board members and elected officials to get interested in serving their communities, and hopes that the program will work as a ripple effect.
The adults will start to realize that they need to step up to be able to chair and supervise the youth workers, and that the youth's enthusiasm will get them to realize the value and power of their vote and turnout too.
With several hotly contested elections in the state, the Native Vote has helped put candidates over the top. With this movement, Spark sees the future of voting in Alaska to be one full of activity from youth and elder alike. I'm Hannah Bissett.
Michigan State University Museum, in collaboration with the Native American Institute and other campus partners, is hosting the Red Dress Project. The outdoor display features about 60 red dresses collected through community donations, created by Métis artist Jamie Blackmorset to raise awareness of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. The artist says each dress represents their absence and is a visual reminder of their stories and struggle for justice. It's part of museum events to commemorate Women's History Month and will run through March 17th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND.
Support by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, working to ensure tribal colleges and universities are included in our higher education system. Info on 35 tribal colleges and universities at aihec.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Today is the first work day under this year's daylight savings time. No doubt you were reminded how much that extra hour counts when your alarm clock went off this morning. Some of us need a little more time to adjust than others. For the most part, there is no getting away from the clock no matter where you go. But there was a time when life revolved more around the movement of the sun during the day and throughout the year. It determined farming cycles and ceremonies. It fostered a different concept of time that persists in some tribal cultural traditions today. Are you a sun-up to sundown kind of person? Do you think of time differently than the non-Native people around you? In this hour, we're talking Native concepts of time, and you can join us. Our phone number in the Albuquerque studio is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Cherokee, North Carolina, is Tom Belt. He is a retired Cherokee Language Program Coordinator for Western Carolina University. He's also a citizen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. Hello, Tom. Welcome back to Native America Calling.
Hello, Sean, and thank you for having me on this program.
Absolutely. Joining us from New York is Dr. Roger Doobie. He is a professor emeritus at the College of Science at Rochester Institute of Technology and also a member of the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. That's ACES. He's a board member. He's also a member of the Abenaki Nation. Hello, Roger, and welcome to our show.
Hello, Sean. Thank you so much for having me on board. I appreciate it.
You bet. And also joining us today from Hopi Tribal Lands in Arizona is Clark Tanakongva. He is a musician and also a former Hopi vice chairman. Hello, Clark, and welcome back to the Native America Calling.
Thank you and for having me be part of this program this morning. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, I want to go ahead and start with you. Did you have a tough time getting up, losing that extra hour this weekend?
Oh, Sean, I have a time. I have a tough time getting up any morning and stuff. No, we kind of adjusted, you know, it wasn't that bad. We kind of liked the idea of, you know, it was all of a sudden we had to actually get up and do something. So
there you go. Well, tell us, Tom, Cherokees, do you folks traditionally observe daylight savings time, or is that a European kind of thing?
No, of course not. We didn't have daylight savings time. In the Native Indigenous world of that whole concept of allocating time and counting time like that isn't the way we looked at it. We didn't have those kinds of things. We didn't look at it that way. It was a whole other different kind of paradigm that we used to observe and to keep track of our lives.
Well, let's talk more about that. I mean, what primarily is the main difference or was the main difference between the Cherokee understanding of time and mainstream Western understanding when it comes to this whole concept of time?
Okay, well, I'm fairly certain that most of us as tribal people will agree that in our culture, time isn't is a non-linear concept. It doesn't exist on a line from point A to point B. Primarily because time doesn't necessarily imply distance. It's not from point A to point B. We looked at time as a compilation of events, things that happened in our everyday lives, things to be noted, things to be observed. So basically what we're looking at is we looked at time as a series of events, and these events, for the most part, were attuned to not a linear form of that to us seemed to be abstract for time to be linear like that. Time worked in cycles.
Okay, worked in cycles, less linear. Tom, what about the language? Do the Cherokees have a word for time or other language references to denote, you know, the hours and the days moving by?
Of course, I don't want to go into a long dissertation about that, but no, time in our language, in the Western, we have two different dialects, but the word is basically linguistically the same. It's just a different dialect. But our concept for it in the Western dialect, or what was referred to as the Over the Hill dialect, was Ahli Lisa'i, which means, actually, it does mean as things move along, or as things happen, not move along like going in any particular direction, but as things occur, as they go along, there's our word for it. So right off the bat, even the concept of time indicates that what we looked at was these things that occur and that continue to occur and happen aren't really going in any kind of direction, but are ongoing at the same time. So a lot of the way, I mean, I might explain that, is that time, according to the words we used, was more like what was in fact a place. And it was a place that past, present, and future all existed in kind of one kind of volume, one kind of place. And that place, of course, is easily recognized as just being life, you know. And even scientifically speaking, you know, we revolve around the sun and we come back to the same place again. We're not going anywhere, you know. And then this galaxy is going around another galaxy, so that system is not going anywhere either. Now, I realize that there's a concept that the universe is expanding, but it seems that the mechanism of how it works is all kind of in one place, and so we observe time in that same manner. So actually, we're taking astronomical kind of concept, the science of astronomy, and saying that, yes, we believe the same thing, too, that it's all happening as we are here, as we're alive. And it seems to reoccur. I mean, it doesn't seem to reoccur, but it seems to work in cycles and stuff. So as I heard, most tribes actually had, we didn't have just four seasons. We had five, you know. And also, if we count, I mean, if we're using a calendar, we had 13 months and not 12. You know, so our the way that we looked at or how we timed it in the reoccurrence of things coming back was a little bit different than the way Western Europeans defined
Tom, that's really interesting. What was that fifth season then that the Cherokee observed in that 13th month?
Okay. In our tribe, in Ketua people, and that's our actual name. It's not Cherokee, by the way, and stuff. The word Cherokee doesn't mean anything in our language. It's not even a word from our language and stuff. It's, you know, it's our check cashing name, but we have to live by it.
Okay.
But among the Ketua people, we had two springs. So we had an early spring and then a late spring. So it went like from fall to winter to early spring, late spring, summer, and then back to fall again.
Okay. All right. So I imagine then the planting and the agrarian lifestyle, that would have been impacted then by that extra season, the way you describe it.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, it can be noted by the fact that I think that that time was indicated by the marking of migrations, migrations of birds, insects, and also of aquatic life. Here in the East, here in the Great Smokies, we have a whole lot of water and a whole lot of rivers and stuff. So there was an immense volume of life in the water, and that was observed and also calculated and in our own way it was documented. So migrations became extremely important seasonal markers. So I think at the beginning of the migrations, when ducks and geese began to come back through, also that indicated a time of planting or getting the ground ready. And then as the first sprouts and the first leaves began to bud out, that indicated the second part of the spring and stuff.
We're going to take a short break and come back with our other guests. We're going to continue this discussion time. What does it mean today? What does it mean traditionally for us as Native people? What's your concept of time? Give us a call. Let us know. 1-800-996-2848. Small business is the lifeblood of Native economic development. Entrepreneurs often put a lot on the line to make a difference for themselves and their communities. We're at the Reservation Economic Summit in Las Vegas, and we'll hear about opportunities and risks facing small business. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Are you a Native American healthcare provider, recovery counselor, social worker, domestic and sexual abuse advocate, or traditional healer working in Native American communities? Dr. Ruby Gibson will begin an advanced immersion in healing historical trauma. This online masterclass in somatic archaeology uses the lens of a 7-generational recovery approach, providing powerful modalities, and is offered tuition-free to tribal members. Registration deadline is March 1st. Info at freedomlodge.org. Who support this show?
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and today we're talking about Native concepts of time. What have your Native elders taught you about time, the concept of time, the hours, the seconds? What do they mean to you? Join us by calling 1-800-996-2848. Once again, that number, 1-800-996-2848. Let's talk now to Clark Tanakungva. He's out in Hopi, where he is a former vice chair and also a musician. Clark, thank you again for joining the show. And we just heard some interesting history and culture from Tom Belt and how the Cherokees relate to time. Let's talk more about the Hopi perspective and traditional ways of interpreting time in your culture and community.
Uikokwa loloma. Again, thank you, and good day to everybody out there listening in Native America Calling today. Hopi, the way I understood it, is pretty, is very intricate, but yet in a simple format, not using any scientific myth as maybe it is, but yet, you know, that's not the way I understand it. Is to me, it's everybody is always told, you know, rise early, work your day, and rest when the sun goes down. That's usually the concept that what's been always been told to us, you know. So, you know, another part of that is, you know, do your prayers before sunrise or right at the time of sunrise. And something that I just heard from the gentleman here before me was that, you know, some of the wording that we have, and that's in accordance to Hopi, a lot of our ceremonial process, and especially the talk of sometimes, you know, how we relate to time. Like one of the thing is a word that we use is koyanginuktu, is the time of when the gray is just rising in the morning. Sikyanginuktu is when the sun has just now, you know, the hues of the good yellow rays have now risen. And then, you know, you've got the Talava, which where the Tawa Yama, meaning our father, the sun has now arose, and so forth throughout the day of what you call Tawanasabi, meaning the middle of the day, meaning the time of the what we call the noon hour, but of course it's not related to how 12 o'clock sits by the modern system. Then you got Tawansabzupa, which is after the noon hour, between probably in mid-afternoon and so forth. Tapki is where it's kind of like right before evening time. And then you've got Mihi or Dawapaki, meaning that's where the sun has set for the day and the evening time comes apart. Then the part of the cycle of the moon comes in, if there is a moon cycle that you can actually observe, you know, during the time of that time of the season. So, but like what the gentleman also says, is that we do have a probably one of the most complete calendar set yet out of any tribe that I know of here in North America, that we still go by the 12 or 13 moon cycles and the sun cycles that we have our ceremonial calendar that's set on it. Along with that, our daily affairs, that what we conduct our business with, like he talked about planting, harvesting, and so forth. So us being a agricultural tribe, that's what our main emphasis was on, the cycles of the time of planting and harvesting and ceremonial cycles is how Hopi views daylight on a daily basis.
And Clark, how has life changed then? Because, of course, now we have clocks and we have these modern calendars and we have work days. Often start at 8 or 9 o'clock and wrap up at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. And how has that changed there within the Hopi people when it comes to issues like ceremonies and cultural traditions? How have you folks made that transition?
Tremendously. You know, I could still remember back in my youth, back in about the 60s, is that one of our grandfathers was a traditional leader. And so he had a difficult time of having to transition from a weekend kind of activity rather than going actually by the moon and the sun cycles. There's only one village that still observes that. That's in Forest Mesa. They have a lot of their ceremonies still based on the moon and sun cycles, so it's not some of the ceremonies isn't going to end up on a weekend, a Saturday or a Sunday event, but rather maybe a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, or even a, you know, sometime during that time. But that's how it used to be, you know, and it still is in one of the observances out here. But today I made the comment earlier to the lady that called me, and I said, you know, everything is based on a white man's custom or tradition. A white man works Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 every day, whereas a Native American, they works from sun up to sun down. There's no such thing as an hourly type of thing of how we get paid and graded by. The other part about it is that in the Christian way of it is that they observed it as having a time off, meaning that it's a time of rest, Saturday and Sunday. And unfortunately, we've converted a lot of our ceremonial calendar to that concept. So so that we don't have to take so much time off from our regular 8-to-5 jobs, whereas that is a given right. By, you know, if you're going to practice your religion and your culture, and that's something that a non-native would never ever understand why we have to have so much time off from work.
Clark, when you were growing up there in the village, do you remember, did the elders have clocks in their homes?
Very rarely. I mean, I didn't very see, I just remember one time, I mean, because our father was, an employee of the federal government. I remember he had that wind-up clock, you know, and that's what I remember seeing. But I didn't really observe or remember seeing any clocks until I actually got into school and started learning what, from the short and the long hand from 12 back to 12, you know, midnight to midnight and so forth. I had no concept of what that was until you really get into school. And like I said, that's just me. Maybe others had, you know, a different view of it, but that's how I remember being born in the 50s and raised up in the 60s and 70s. But the village that I come from, Hotvilla, still doesn't have real electricity. So everything is based on solar right now or today. You know, you got a lot of this cell phones and so forth, but that's what I remember from back then, that you know, there was very little to no clocks that were in homes.
It's interesting to think about, because you mentioned how you learned about, you know, that Western model of time when you went to school, and so often we talk about, you know, the language barriers or just some of the other cultural impacts, but we don't always talk about, well, how were our native kids impacted by time in this new notion of time when they first went off to school. So that's an interesting concept. Clark, we're all familiar with that term also, Indian time. Where do you think that comes from?
I think that's just, you know, the way that a lot of people view things, you know, when they come out here and say, they're supposed to be coming out at in the morning time, or like a ceremony is supposed to start in morning time. Well, there isn't no specific minute, second, hour that they're going to be. It's either going to come right at the time at the sunrise, or end right at the sunset, and so forth. So there isn't no such clear idea of what time things actually. You know, like you go to a modern event, like say the Herd show that just ended there. Yeah, it's all on time. Powwow is going to happen right at midday. Here, it's not going to happen like that. Like I said earlier, that our lunch break maybe not going to happen until 2:30 in the afternoon, you know. And so that's what I see as what I call as Indian time or Native American time. I mean, Indian time, I try to correct that a lot of people, meaning that the word India belongs to people from India, not to us. We're Native Americans and various other tribes.
Right. Good point. I'll tell you what, here at Native America Calling, we definitely have to pay very strict attention to those clocks and the seconds to make sure we go on the air at the right time and take our breaks at the right time as well. Clark, thank you for that background and those insights coming from Hopi lands. And at this point, let's talk a little bit about the science of ancient Native cultures and how those sciences and how that technology relates into our discussion today about time. And to do that, let's now talk with Roger Duby, who is joining us from New York, and he is a physicist. He actually has a PhD from Princeton, among his many other accolades. And Roger, you know, let's talk about the Mayan calendar, and I think many of our listeners are familiar with the Mayan calendar, but they actually had three calendars. It wasn't just one. There were three. Can you explain how those calendars were able to calculate time with such an enormous level of precision?
Sure. Nyawe, again, thank you for having me on. The listeners, I want everyone to understand that I come from a Native community and Native background, but then I went and got my PhD in physics. And so that really kind of distorts your view of things. And so I feel like I'm always standing between two worlds, one foot in the Native world and one foot in the scientific world. One of the things that always intrigued me was the fact that the Mayans were able to measure celestial events to extremely high precision. So let me tell you a little bit about that. There is something called the Mayan Codex, which is basically a handwritten set of books that describe how to calculate different lunar, solar, and celestial cycles. So they had three different cycles. And by placing and orienting buildings and notches within those buildings to very specific constraints, they were able to measure when certain events would happen. One of those important events is, when does the Earth complete a revolution around the sun and return to exactly the same place relative to the celestial background? And so they were able to use these three calendars to determine to a fraction of a day, a tiny fraction of a day, exactly when that would happen and at what time of day and so on. The precision that Sean mentioned was 17 seconds. And that's a remarkable thing. When you think of 17 seconds out of an entire year, that is a really, really small number. There are a couple of things that gave them an advantage there. The mathematics they developed used base 20. Base 20 has much, much bigger numbers than base 10. So they were able to handle astronomical size numbers very easily. They had already invented the zero, so they had a placeholder, and they could do effectively what today Western society does as scientific notation. They could do those calculations. By using the three calendars, the solar, the lunar, and the celestial calendar, they were able to combine them and find when this event would happen to a precision of 17 seconds. That precision was not duplicated by the rest of the world until the 1960s. I was in college when that happened. It's remarkable.
Yeah, it's absolutely just astounding, the technological insight that our ancient relatives had. Just mind-blowing. Roger, what types of tools did they have to make those calculations? What exactly was at their disposal?
Yeah, there was very little in terms of tools. They had the ability to construct buildings very precisely. If you go to that part of the world, they're large blocks of rock that are interlocked to make a pyramid, for example, a Mayan pyramid, are so tightly positioned that you cannot push a razor blade between two of these large stones. They're just so perfectly matched. So it sort of mystifies engineers today as to how they did that. But they were able to accomplish that. Given the fact that they could do those things to such high precision, then it became a question of orienting these things correctly so that they pointed to exactly that position in the sky on a certain day within the year, when you can expect the sun and the celestial background to all line up properly and indicate that the sun has made it all the way back around. So really, other than the observational tool of looking through effectively a slot to see when a star just touches the horizon, they didn't have any additional tools. They did have the ability to orient things properly. They did have a compass that they had invented as well. But other than that, very little. And then the fraction, of course, of the year was what they did to get the 17 seconds that we now know of as being the level of precision.
Truly remarkable. Roger, I've heard you also talk about a Native American scientific method, and it included a spirituality component. What exactly is that, and has Western science embraced any part of that?
Okay, so this is where I keep pushing on Western science to please open their eyes and take a look at the world the way it really exists. There's a lot to talk about here. I'll see if I can be as concise as possible, Sean. The native scientific method is basically very similar to the Western scientific method, with the exception that our method begins at the large scale and works down to a very precise level of microscopy, whereas the Western science method starts at a very small level and looks at just one thing and ignores the rest of everything that's around it. So they don't pay attention to the other factors that might be affecting it. They try very much to isolate things, whereas we start with the entire system and work our way down. That entire system includes people. It includes plants and animals, the movement of air. It includes the spirit, the sense of well-being that an environment might have, something that Western science doesn't even have an expression for. That's like not in their equations at all. There was a visit back in, I believe it was the 50s, when Einstein went to the Southwest and visited with some of the native folks there. And he came back and said that the one missing piece in science is spirituality. And that's something that needs to be looked at.
Okay. All right. We're going to have to take another break here because we do have to mind that clock here at Native American Calling, like I said. But fascinating discussion here. And if any of our listeners would like to join in, give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Act protects authentic American Indian and Alaska Native artists and craftspeople and their art and craftwork. Under the Act, it is illegal to market art or craftwork misrepresented as American Indian, Indian, Native American, or Alaska Native made, or as the product of a particular Indian tribe. Reporting potential Act violations can be done at doi.gov/IACB or at 1-888-ART-FAKE, support provided by Indian Arts and Crafts Board.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and we are focusing on time today. Seems like we never have quite enough of it, but it wasn't always that way. Native culture and science account for different concepts of time, and that's the focus of today's conversation. If you'd like to join in, 1-800-996-2848, 1-800-996-2848, that's our number at the studio. And let's take a caller now, Chanupa, who is listening on Keeley Radio in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Hello, Chanupa, how are you doing today?
Thank you, Brother Sean. This is a good topic. You guys are talking about time. Ehane oyatemi taki wosutaki makanka ta eganakapi. Uchi makaki woki le onkupi. Okay? Mother Earth gave us this sign of time. Today, people don't understand that because they're not listening to our birds. When our animals come back for a change of season, that's how we set time. Like a couple of brothers were talking about. The one from, I think, Alaska or wherever. We have a saying in our culture, but it's sang in a song. So if you don't mind, I'll sing the song real briefly, and I'll end it fast and give you the time struggle, okay, understanding that balance. So that song is, Lechi-ya-ya-ya, O-ma-ki-ya-yo-yo-y, O-ma-ki-ya-ye-lo-hey-ye-ye. Lechi-ya-ya-ya, O maki ya yu yu, o maki ya ye lo hei ye hoi. O chi makaya, le chi ya ya, o maki ya yu yu, hei ye, le chi ya ya, o maki ya yu yu, hei ye hoi. That song is how we develop time changes through our animals, which nobody does. Here on Pine Ridge, we do it. And that song was originally used by our grandmothers, our moms, our aunties, our daughters, our sisters, and our baby girls. That song, they governed the time. So when the robins came back early in late January, early February, that showed the heat was going to come back. Sean, today here on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in early March, we're getting 65-degree weather. hot, warm, so all the insects and bugs. And that goes out to all the women, and this understanding goes out to those two brothers that were talking about time change. And once again, I love you for having these type of subjects that Chinupa can contribute to on behalf of the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Hokahe, Sean, and have a good rest of the day. Take care.
All right. Hokahe, Chinupa, we love you too and appreciate that song that you shared with our listeners today. Let's go back to the Southwest now and continue this discussion with John Chahati. He's joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, where he is an educator at the Crow Canyon Archaeological Center. He is Laguna and Zuni Pueblos. Hello, John. Welcome back to NAC and Guatse.
Guatse, Kaitawa. Keshe, ho. This is John. Just a slight correction. I'm up here in Cortez, Colorado. And although I'm an educator here at the Crow Canyon Archaeological Center, I really don't speak for them. But what I can say is that the knowledge and the information that I pass on is simply because of those who came before me, the stories, the knowledge, the acquired skill of our predecessors, our ancestors. They have given us this. And, you know, I was really interested in what Clark and Roger had to say. And let me simply add to what Roger mentioned. You asked him about tools. The one most important tool we have as human beings is that space between our ears. We use that brain matter to observe our environment, our universe. And it's through that perception that we can develop guesses and ideas, much like Clark said. And when you think about science, any of you listeners out there, and I'm glad you're listening to Native America Calling, if you've ever lifted up a rock and said, ooh, I wonder what's underneath there, roly-polies or bugs or spiders, that's science. And science really is just what we as human beings observe our environment. And then through continual observation, repeated instances and events, then we can say, ooh, we know that's going to happen every single time, like our Mayan neighbors. They observed specific celestial events. And so that's what our ancestors gave to us, and we perpetuate that knowledge. Those of us who have the opportunities like Roger and others who are now scientists, academics, because our ancestors survived the boarding school, they gave us the ability now to use the knowledge that was forced upon our ancestors. And being a descendant of a boarding school resident, we now use that knowledge to say to the rest of the world, we survived, but we're using the same knowledge and skills. And so that's what we as human beings can do. And I love this discussion about science. And one last thing, you know, the measurement and identification of time is really a human construct. Just like Chalupa said, if we think about our caribou relatives, our monarch butterflies, any species on this planet that leaves its place for a seasonal change, they have time as a construct. Time has always been there. Time has been before us as humans, and once humans are no longer on this piece of planet that are here, time will continue. That's what really we should keep in mind when we talk about this construct of time.
John, I also want to ask you, so we're talking today about the Western European context of time being more of a linear transgression, and as Native people, it's more cyclical, it's more of a rounded type of concept. And obviously, it can create challenges for us as Native people when it comes to like deadlines or clocks and things like that. But if we also look back and think about these more traditional contexts of what time means, are there benefits that we can practice in our lives today? And if so, what can we do to foster a more traditional understanding of time in our own lives?
Well, like Roger said, incorporating both the physical realm of what science is, and then the existential or spiritual construct, bringing them two together. I think Eastern Hemisphere constructs separated that. They simply said that there should be this barrier between science constructs, the knowledge of what science gives to us in the physical world, and then that part of the existential spiritual construct, there should be this barrier. But as Roger says, blending those two together, how they reinforce one another. Certainly time is in our world today, if we're having, say, would like to get at a certain spot, a certain time that gives us the best advantage, either to get a job or to undergo a surgical procedure, if time was not a concrete construct, an idea, a limitation, then anybody could do anything anywhere. But certainly time provides us opportunities that we may or may not have. But at the same time, if we simply go on Indian time, we sometimes might lose out on the benefits of a specific event, or we might not observe certain things, such as, like, you know, say someone is impaired visually and trying to cross the street and not be mindful that there's this time limit that you can cross safely in the time you can. So certainly time can be used to the benefit in our world now, today, but certainly maybe long ago it was not as structured or not as a specific limitation. Today it helps us perform in a world today, and because that's, unfortunately, that's the way it is. But there are many Native people who are part of whatever occupation or career choice they have. And, you know, if your professor says, well, you have to get your thesis in at a certain time, and if you pass that, maybe you may not pass and get the credentials that you want. So, yeah, there can be limitations that may be a negative influence, but we should not simply – I mean, if someone's a procrastinator, like sometimes I can be, then you might lose out on opportunities. So like you just said yourself a little bit ago, Sean, if you're not staying up to the minute or the seconds of what Native America calling, you know, the radio station might dump you. So, and I've been on your side, having worked at Native America calling, so I know exactly right. What time means.
Hey, we don't want that to happen, that's for sure.
No,
John.
No, because well, this is a fantastic show.
Thank you so much. We heard Roger talk about these ancient observatories that were used to measure time built by the Mayans, but our own Pueblo ancestors built similar types of structures. Can you talk about that?
Certainly. Throughout the Southwest, and we're fortunate here in the Southwest because we still have some of these structures that are still, we can go visit some of the national monuments that have been set aside for us that the public gets a chance to participate and view, as well as several other places around the Western Hemisphere. It's just that our climate allows us to preserve these places still. And one of the more prominent places that we have the opportunity to go would be Chaco Culture National Historic Park. We can see the structures that were built in observance of the solstices and the equinoxes, as well as the sun dagger that was on top of Tejada Butte. But again, it was really simply an observation of the passage of one moment to the next. There was not only just the sun's motion, but also the moon's motion, the linear observations that were there. So the most important thing that I take away and help others understand when it comes to looking at Chaco is, first of all, humans were observant. They were seeing, oh, this happened again and again and again, and then I can make a hypothesis or a guess as to, well, is it going to happen again? And by continued observation, which is really what human beings do, then we can come up with perhaps maybe drawings, and that, as you mentioned a little bit ago, this circular construct. And a circular construct basically meaning that there's no beginning, there's no end. There's a continuum versus a linear construct. There's simply, certainly we can say it starts somewhere and goes somewhere, but there's this barrier. There's between those guys on this side and those guys on the other side. But a circular construct is more of inclusiveness, that not just the physical realm, as Roger mentioned, but also the existential constructs, the things that we can't really see, but we certainly acknowledge that are there. And then the continuum of the cosmos, that's what a circular construct is. And we see it in many constructs. We see it in our pottery. We see it in our art design. We see it on petroglyphs. And so that continuum is always part of most indigenous cultures throughout the Western Hemisphere. And it's really that human perception of what time it means.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, John. Let's take another caller, James, listening to station KUNM in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hello, James. You're on Native America Calling today.
Hello. Thank you for this topic. It's a good topic. I'd just like to say, first of all, I'm Scott Bipikundi. We know time as far as what non-natives brought here It is a concept of money, and that's what they use it for. And we as indigenous people never saw time as money. It is from sunup to sundown, and that's how we lived our life. And as far as being Native Americans, we never see this sacred earth as America. This is our homeland, and we are not Native Americans. We are Pikani, and we belong to the earth. And that's how I want to say it. Thank you.
James, that's a really good point. And I want to ask John to chime in there. John, our caller James, connects time with money from that European context. Would you agree with that?
Well, certainly, we understand that. I mean, if you have a job, I have a job. Most of the listeners, they have a job, but they got to go and put in a certain number of hours to get paid. And that's really what society is. If long ago, our ancestral Puebloans who occupied the Four Corners region, such as Chaco, Mesa Verde, well, if they didn't put in that time during the day to plant their crops and take care of their fields and produce food for their community, well, then the community suffers. So in a sense, they were limited to time. But then again, when the winter came, obviously the growing season is not as productive as it is when the summertime. Well, then there's other things you can do. There's storytelling. There's making tools, repairing tools. So certainly we can think of it as time producing capital or this thing called money, dollars and cents and so forth. But now, long ago, it was the same thing. Productivity was a measure of how much time we put into it. And that's the, I guess you would say, what's the knowledge, as Roger said, the existential knowledge, not just the physical knowledge of how to plant and grow things, but knowing when it's time to plant, knowing when it's time to harvest. Those are all related to a society's perspective of what time means.
All right. Clark, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Clark. We're winding down on the show. I might just go ahead and give you the last word here, though. But listening to our conversation today and some of these analogies here, time is money, cyclical time, what do you know about our elders and our ancestors? And how did they keep track of people's ages? Or did they? Was that even a conversation among our relatives long ago? How old somebody was or how to keep track of how old somebody might have been?
A lot of it, the way I remember it is what it was told to us, is it was the time of the season. You know, a lot of it is probably the same thing through other natives or other tribes, is that time of the season when some people was born or came to this part of the world. Or the other part is that big event happened during that time, and that's how they would remember that individual. Or they just based it on the Hopi side, from what I know, is that they compared each other's to, okay, she or he was born three seasons after he was or she was. That's a lot of things that the way they did with the age. But as far as the time goes, you know, is that it's always been based that way. You know, it's always based on the daily sunrise, sunset, the time of the seasons, and so forth. And so, like, say, you know, I was born in February, they would say that, oh, he was born during the month of the Buamuya, the purification moon ceremony. That's when he came about during that time, because it was during that ceremony when he came and was born. So a lot of those things, that's how we kept ages, but it wasn't to the point of, I don't think anybody really kept the number of years in that way.
Okay. All right, Clark, I'm sorry, but we are now out of time, actually, so we're going to have to wrap up the show. But I want to thank you, Clark Tanakongva, as well as Dr. Roger Duby, John Jahadi, and Tom Belt for a wonderful conversation today. And please, listeners, join us again tomorrow when we will broadcast live from Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Reservation Economic Summit organized by the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development. Join us then.
Does your club, institution, or other group need custom-branded apparel? A wide variety of t-shirts, hoodies, and much more, all custom-printed or embroidered, are available from nativescreenprinting.com, a division of Sky Screen Printing, who support this program. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members serve to alleviate poverty while earning money for college and gaining professional skills. Rewarding service opportunities can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
My precious relatives, celebrate National Nutrition Month. Choose healthier food options for you and your loved ones. Sometimes it can be difficult to make good food choices, but there are many options that can help. For more information, visit ihs.gov/diabetes or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.